welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, in the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Christine, also known as Tacos, and I teach engineering with Lego, and I've also been featured on Lego Master Season 3, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, I'm Andy Grover, he, him. I use Legos to create models of buildings in Rhode Island that I like. I tend to try to go for buildings that I think maybe get a little overlooked. Public school buildings and public library buildings are some of my favorites. We should think of those buildings kind of as landmark buildings. And I try to make that point in a whimsical way by making them out of Lego.
Thank you both for joining me. As you could tell from our guest intro, a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about Lego and kind of how you both work with Lego in a unique way. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
So the last thing I probably read, it's called Nobody Told Me This About Raising a Bilingual Child by Jani Perez. It's part of the Latina Mom Legacy, and it's all about learning how to include daily bilingual, you know, being dual lingual in a household and raising a child in a dual lingual household. And that was 2 months ago. Everything else has been children's books. I'm not going to mention a bunch of children's books because, you know, I work with kids and short attention span myself. So that's me.
Sounds like an awesome read for people who, you know, are bilingual themselves and have children. Yeah. What about you, Andrew?
I read, by coincidence, not a coincidence, Lost Providence by David Broussard. And Rhode Islanders might remember that David Broussard was the longtime architectural critic for the Providence Journal. And an unapologetic classicist. He could really elicit strong responses of agree or disagree, agree with him. But certainly everybody agrees, big champion of the city of Providence. And anyway, at the building, the book Lost Providence is where he kind of rates like the 10, tragic lost buildings in Providence that were lost. They're now parking lots or something, or something horrible. And he gives the back history in the pictures. And most of them are before most people's times. Not totally. Some of them came down like in the 60s and the 70s, but a lot of these. Looking at the pictures of these is just crazy. Such like breathtaking buildings that at some point people just felt, they didn't care, or they would rather park cars there instead. And it's an amazing book of kind of what we've had in the city of Providence. And you can read it in a lot of different ways, but, you know, one of the ways I definitely read it is to be really careful about what you knock down. Really, really, really careful.
Was there a particular building in the book that stood out to you of like, wow, I wish I had been around to see it, or I wish like they had been able to preserve it?
I don't know about one in particular. Now I'm kind of like reminding myself here.
No worries. I was just curious.
The Narragansett Hotel building was one that looked to me, I guess, amazing. That one I think stood out to me a little bit because of what replaced it. There is a building there. It's where Dorrance and Way Bossett meets. In the buildings that there, it's a Johnson and Wales building. And again, not to put down Johnson and Wales because they have a lot of nice buildings, but what was taken down versus what was put up is like, oh my God, the building that's put up. It was one of those things like seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
In one certain way is it's a really brutal building that went up. Not to be too like ultra classicist, but it's a little bit like of a cautionary tale of, you know, we have a city in Providence that to me, and David Broussard didn't say this directly, but like what I kind of get to it to me is more like a European city. It's more like a Dublin or a Lisbon and something like that. And so some of this is a little bit of a cautionary tale of like, be careful about just like wrecking balling this, you know, and then putting up what you think is hot at the moment, you know, realize that there's a vibe to a place, and it's a lot, like they seem to get that better in like European cities or South American cities, that like there's a real vibe here and that's kind of your brand, you know, and we should think of Providence more on those terms.
It just makes me think of, and I've never traveled overseas, but like from what I've heard of people talking about, is particularly Americans going overseas, is that they're surprised about how old everything is there. Like there's so many buildings that are like so much older than even the country that you just came from that you live in. Kind of like wild to think about.
Yeah. But you know, something I remember going to Lisbon, and something that I realized, because Americans go there and they're like, wow, what an old world city. But it actually made me think of home. And Providence is kind of an old world city. When I was walking, I'm walking down this street in Lisbon, it occurred to me that it's pretty much was an 18th century streetscape. It was like late 1700s, early 1800s. It's beautiful. Because it was this part of the city that got rebuilt after the earthquake and really beautiful. And I suddenly realized though, is this is just as old as Benefit Street. Like when you stroll down Benefit Street, it's a similar thing. So I would encourage Rhode Islanders to think of that when you're rounding the 300 year mark, you can start to think of your city as kind of like an old world city. It's a pre-car city, you know, laid out that way. yeah, that's the way, I mean, everybody's gonna make their own decision, but that's kind of what I'm taking away from these things.
No, for sure. So I also don't have much to talk about in terms of adult books, but I do have a graphic novel that I think adults could appreciate because it's a youth graphic novel, but it's autobiographical kind of. It's like a fictionalized story, but based on the author's experience going to a Russian summer camp, and it's called Be Prepared. It was very popular, like I would say, when it came out maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. I think it might have got picked for a Rhode Island Middle School Book Award. I think it got picked for one of the book awards. But I never read it when it was like really popular. But I read it to add it to a features list on No Flying, No Tights. So another plug for No Flying, No Tights, because I'm features writer there, because we were doing a summer themed list. And yeah, it was really interesting as someone who never went to summer camp, reading kind of about the author's experience at summer camp, but also like the added twist of that it was her family were Russian immigrants and they didn't have a lot of money, but their Eastern Orthodox Church would pay for them to go to the summer camp. And that's how the author and her brother were able to go to the summer camp. But it turns out, not to give too much away, but it turns out that this summer camp is not what she was expecting it to be based on the stories of her other more affluent friends' experience of camp. But she ultimately finds ways to enjoy it and make some friends. But like I said, I think adults can appreciate it kind of looking back on that stage of your life and being like, yeah, that kind of was what it was like. You know, making friends was hard. And sometimes being on your own for the first time is like only like an 11 or 12 year old is hard. So yeah, it was a fun book. And I think the art style is really cute. So if you enjoy a good graphic novel, I'd say check it out.
Cool.
All right. But so besides reading, have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
I work 24/7. So on my off time, I basically have just background noise, which is usually like Frasier or just a show that I've seen on the repeat. I kind of tend to tune out some stuff unless I need to focus. But yeah, with me, I need to just have some white noise in the background. So I just put on, you know, shows that I've seen in the past. But I'm sorry. I saw a show called Beef recently on Netflix. So controversial, very, very controversial. Really funny though.
You're in good company because a lot of our guests that come on talk about the comfort shows that they kind of keep on in the background. So you're definitely not the only person who is rewatching things and going back to things in order to have something going on in the background.
Yeah. That's the only thing that's the only show that I've been able to really focus on. I saw, was it the new Super Mario movie? And I fell asleep, unfortunately. I'm just so exhausted. I woke up during the, you know, the popular Peaches song. That's when I woke up. So at the beginning and at the end, I was like, oh, movie's over. Oh, that's what happens when you're a parent, you know, just fall asleep.
I'm sorry, I can't say that I have anything particularly more interesting to add. I can't say I watch a lot of TV. Occasionally I'll put something on, but right, it's kind of a backgroundy kind of thing. I can't say I watch a lot of movies anymore either. I think the last time I sat down and watched a movie I think was around Easter, because I suddenly had a desire to put the Ten Commandments on, because I don't know why, because I think I remember that used to be on TV like years back, like always, like around like Easter, Passover, they put like, I don't remember, I think it was Channel 10, we put the Ten Commandments on, and I had suddenly a desire to watch it again. I was like, scratch that itch, and that was it.
Definitely thematic around Easter time. So either of you, is there anything that you do when you're kind of in your off time, if besides reading, in terms of like consuming media?
I build with Lego. That's what I do.
Well, that's true. All right.
That's what Andrew and I have in common.
No, you usually when I'm making stuff, I'll just put music on, or I'll put the radio. I like to listen to the news. Yeah, but sorry, no, I can't say that that there's a podcast or TV or movies that I really watch a lot.
I'm feeling vindicated that someone else still listens to terrestrial radio, because I do it mostly in the car. Just like sometimes I don't want to finagle with the phone or whatever and find something to put on. So just like, because I just need some noise on while I'm driving. And my boyfriend will always be like, who listens to terrestrial radio anymore? And I'm like, I do. And I listen to Kim and Giovanni in the morning, and I hear them talk about all their quick hits. And it's a fun time before I go into work.
With me, every time I drive, so aside from teaching STEM with Lego, I also teach Zumba. So I'm always listening to music in the background. It's mostly international music and from different eras. But yeah, no, I always have to have, I can't drive. The only time I'm driving in silence is after a convention or after I've done an assembly with like hundreds of kids at a time. I need that like silence, that's dark, like silence. That's the only time. If you're driving around without music, you're a serial killer. Sorry. No. No. I have trust issues, and I'm going to not trust you if you're driving around in silence. So you must have had a crazy day or you're a serial killer. That's it.
That's fair. Because I also find it really hard to drive, like I said, without anything on. Unless, you know, you're trying to look for someplace and then you turn the music down, like that's going to help you see better.
Naturally.
I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why everyone does that. I guess it's just like you need to eliminate a stimuli in order to focus on where you're going.
That's how I am with my glasses. I need to have my glasses on in order to have a proper conversation. It could be stark dark. I mean, like the lights could be off. I need to find my glasses if you're going to tell me something in the middle of the night. I need, like, wait, hold that thought for a second. Yeah, I'm weird like that, but, you know, that's how my brain functions.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Udemy is an online learning platform for adults who want to improve work-related skills or further develop a personal interest. Users can search through more than 4,000 continuously updated on-demand video courses across 75 categories, including business, technology, design, and more. All courses are taught by world-class instructors and offer a tailor-made learning experience for those who want to learn new technologies and skills to stay competitive in the changing workforce. All you need to get started is your library card and a Google or Microsoft account. You can find more information about how to sign up for Udemy at cranstonlibrary.org.
Yeah, If you're participating in the 2023 Adult Summer Reading Beanstack Challenge, the secret code for listening to the podcast is subscribe. Again, the secret code is subscribe. Learn more and join the fun at cranstonlibrary.beanstack.com. And remember to drink your Ovaltine.
All right. So without further ado, we'll talk about the thing that it seems like it takes, you know, it's a big part of both of your lives. So I thought we'd start out with, how did you get into Lego? Whichever of you wants to answer the question first, like how did you get interested in Lego?
Well, I played with Legos as a kid. Like a lot of people, my aunt gave me my first Lego set. It was the police station, I really enjoyed it as a kid. However, like a lot of people, I kind of grew out of it, so to speak, and came back to it later. So I was not a continuous person.
You had your dark era. With me, I never played with Lego as a kid. That wasn't an option. I grew up in a typical, sorry to say it, stereotypical Hispanic household where, you know, we go by the gendered norm. Back in the day, they would give you dolls, you know, you were given domesticated roles. So, and because unfortunately Lego is a bit out of the price range, it's not common in the Hispanic household. So it's easier to play sports because you could have 16 kids play with the same ball versus, you know, the 16 kids playing with one set. So socioeconomic wise, Lego isn't very part, you know, isn't common in our culture. Lego didn't come into my life till after I graduated college. Before I graduated college, I was a pre-K teacher, and there Lego was always in the background. I worked at KB Toys. You remember KB Toys back in the day? I was the roller girl, like roller skating around the plaza in crazy costumes. And once again, I'd come back to the toy store. I'd recommend kids, you know, recommend certain people shopping for certain things to the pink aisle or to the Hot Wheels aisle. But Lego was just always there in the background. It wasn't until I decided to quit becoming a preschool teacher and go back to school for engineering. And there I got into 3D design, and I found it really fascinating just being able to make all these like pop-up structures or whatever. And I was like, oh, this is what I would kind of want to do. I don't like, you know, graphic rendering or anything like that. So I thought it was pretty tedious. So they were like, oh, well, you should have gone to school for cabinetry or something like that. I was like, no, I'm already in the architecture program. Like, please, just we need to add something else. Please, we need to go beyond the 3D class. And so when I graduated, I landed a job. Well, I wanted to combine engineering with education. I didn't want to go back into, I did not want to work in a cube farm. You know, I had offers to do door designing, stuff like that. I didn't really want that. I don't like having the regular 9-to-5. I'm sorry to say it like that. So I was fortunate enough to find a job teaching engineering with Lego. And then during the pandemic, that company closed. And then I opened up Powered by Tacos, which is teaching STEM with Lego. I literally bring my kit everywhere where the clients are, and we build structures not as massive as Andrew's, not as detailed as Andrew's. They're not even complete replicas, you know, but we will build the Roman Colosseum and stuff like that. We will build the Great Wall of China to gear cars. So we go from mechanical projects to structural projects. So yeah, that's where I am today. Oh, and I somehow made it on the show.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience being on Lego Masters?
It was extremely, well, it was a year ago today that they announced the cast of the show. It was a lot of fun. They inquired about me season 2. It didn't work out. Season 3, I knew exactly what they were not looking for, but I knew how to prepare. Just because I like to build stuff with motion. So I was like, all right, as long as I have myself an animated person that can focus more on aesthetics and like color theory and understanding of that. Someone that I could really mesh well with. I know I have a really good chance because, you know, they inquired about my past. I also knew people from like season one because I worked with them. So I knew what my chances were getting into the show, as bold as I may seem. But it was a lot of fun. It was highly stressful. I mean, we all still experience a little PTSD, you know, when people say, you know, you got 10 minutes left kind of thing. 10 minutes left. Yeah. So we still like kind of flinch and our eyes twitch a little bit. But it was a lot of fun.
And so, Andrew, do you want to talk a little bit more in depth about your Lego replica projects and how you went from being a childhood fan of Lego to building these intricate replicas out of Lego? I saw your model of the PPL library at PPL because that's where the Rhode Island Library Conference was held. And it was great. It's awesome. So I love that. Give kind of like a little bit of a spotlight to buildings that maybe people overlook because they kind of just always have been there. You know, your public school, your public library have always just kind of been part of your neighborhood. You give them a little love and a little appreciation that they deserve.
That's a lovely building, but mm-hmm. You can think of it even more as like a landmark building in Providence. Like I'd say, let's think of it like that. It's a landmark in downtown Providence. Yeah,
for sure.
So the first model that I made as an adult was of the Gorton and Aldrich schools in Warwick. Those are closed now, those buildings. And in fact, people will certainly know Gorton. I shouldn't say it's closed. It's just not used as a school now. It's used as the administration building. But Aldrich has, which is a gorgeous building, has just become an eyesore on Post Road. It's across from the Walmart. And it's such a sad statement of things too, that like you've got a Walmart Plaza, which is some of the ugliest structure I can imagine. And then the other side of the road, you would have this gorgeous building. But there's like trees growing out the windows of it now. And I just don't know what that says about us, you know. But anyway, at the time, those buildings were closing. And that was kind of my attempt to say something about that. Now, how I got the idea of Lego, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know why that leapt out to me that that's the thing that I wanted to do. it's difficult to pinpoint like where in my brain it suddenly went back like 15 years, like in my brain, to be like, well, I think in my parents' house, there's like Legos. Wouldn't that be fun to try to like make it? I am the sort of person that something that somebody kind of pointed out to me lately is I am the sort of person that, I see something and I know I like it but I don't know what to do with it at the moment. But I have a very high capacity to kind of bookmark a thought. apparently, like to me, it's just what I do. But other people kind of notice that it's like, yeah, I'll kind of bookmark something and then come back to it. I can be 15 or 20 years later because then that's the moment where suddenly something clicks and I know what to do. So it might have been something like, yeah, I kind of stopped building with. By the time I like as a teenager, I stopped building. I liked making like big things, and I always liked making buildings, and I was attracted to structures. And maybe that's what I did. It was just kind of like I actually didn't stop. I just kind of bookmarked it. maybe that's what happened. And then it was years later that suddenly I saw something and it clicked. And then that would be an occasion to do it. But anyway, I did it. I guess it was just kind of like my kind of whimsical way of just trying to change the conversation a little bit about public school buildings, that because a lot of them really are lovely buildings. But I noticed people, we don't look at them like that because I think people tend to project their sense of a land. When we look at something, we sometimes don't see a structure in of itself. And instead we kind of like, that we project onto it. So buildings that are like powerful or wealthy will already see them in advance as landmarks, whether they're actually lovely or important or not. And then if a building doesn't have that quality to it, it actually can be quite lovely, but it will be like invisible to us. We'll just like drive right on by it. So I kind of want to relook at that, like a little bit, like Gordon and Aldrich. Those are landmark buildings, you know, in Warwick. They're part of the history of the city. So why the treatment in that capacity? But I could go on and on about that because I talk and I think about that kind of thing a lot.
Okay, so you built these two elementary schools. And then kind of like what happened after that, what was your journey from there to like getting PPL to ask you to do Lego for their building and their remodel?
Yeah. Aldrich and Gordon, they were high schools originally. Oh. And then they were junior high schools for a while. So there's a lot of people in Warwick. They'd be a little older now though, who remember those as high schools or their junior high schools. I built Aldrich, and then I asked for a small RISCA grant to do the other one. And then you have to have public programming in mind. So guess where I went? The libraries. And I asked Warwick and I asked Cranston and I asked Providence if I could put them on display there and then maybe do a little bit of like and maybe do a little programming around it. And so they were on display at Warwick Public Library for a while. They were on display at William Hall for a while. And, Providence couldn't accommodate me at the time because they were doing their renovation. But Christina Bevilacqua, the programs director there, she was very new to the job. So here she is, she's brand new to the job and doesn't really have any space. But she reached out to me because she said, you know, I didn't want to like just be like, no, because she said, I do think what you're doing, it's interesting. There's like something interesting here. So what we ended up doing is at Cranston Public, Christina did a panel discussion about public school architecture. So yeah, we had some public programming around it. Especially when it was in Warwick, some of what I really hoped happened that it engaged a lot of people in Warwick, people who had memories of those buildings, because you're talking about literally tens of thousands of people in Warwick and around the state who have deep connections to those buildings. I kind of like to think of them as the public school buildings are like cultural landmarks a little bit. I like to think of them a little as that. So yeah, it had it that happened. And I ended up talking and kind of taking history. It almost made me kind of, maybe I should be like an historian or something like that. Cause I found myself like out of my element, but in a good way, taking these histories from people, people who had long memories of like, kind of like Warwick, I would consider it cultural history, like, and, you know, I end up talking to a lot of people like that. And I'm like, geez, if I ever teamed up with somebody who's like good at taking these like cultural artifacts, that would be great. So that's where that project went. And then of course, via that, Providence then knew me. So when they were doing their renovation and they had a lot of, part of their budget was for art, they knew who to call.
Fantastic. So I guess another kind of broad question so that you both can touch upon is like, I guess we asked how Lego. We asked how you came to Lego. Now, why Lego? Why is it such an engaging format for STEAM education, for creating these pieces that can then lead to people becoming interested in, you know, like you said, like cultural history and architecture? What is it that you love about it?
I guess I'll go first. Lego sets are expensive, but Lego in general is pretty accessible. It's a medium that it's not made out of marble. you know, it's plastic. So as, yeah, it's something that we kind of all cannot be completely overwhelmed by or intimidated by, because it's a brick that's designed for children originally. So that's kind of what the awesomeness of using this manipulative is. That's how it is for me. And yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, what Christine says, I think, is really on point. And actually, I think that the specific thing you said, like marble versus plastic, that's actually a really good one. Geez, you've explained why I used it better than I can explain it, because I'm making these models of buildings that are often made out of brick and marble, and it's a great way of, at least it's for me, it's a great way of, I keep using the word whimsical, but very serious way of like communicating a message, because, you know, I have these ideas about buildings and how we see a landmark, but you know, I could talk about it, but it's not as effective as communicating it this way. This is a form of communication. And we do love our models for some reason. There's something, have you really ever met anybody like of any age and any background who doesn't see like a model of like a building, or doesn't want to look at it for at least a couple of minutes? And then especially if it's Lego, that's like a whole other level to it. And I often thought about like, why do people like looking at models of stuff? Like, you know, isn't it like, from one perspective, it almost sounds a little ridiculous that you walk into the actual Providence Public Library, but you want to go up and see a little model of the Public Library. I did the Rhode Island Foundation too, that beautiful Union Station building. Like, why would you want to go? Here's the beautiful Union Station building. It's right in front of you. Why do you want to go in and see a little model of it? But we do. We really, really do. And I think it has to do with what Christine said, that these buildings, they're marble and brick, and we can appreciate the awesomeness, but then something about seeing it literally on this different level and seeing it as like a plastic child's brick, something about that helps us with it more. It helps us love it more. So something about that helps the actual thing and then the model thing, there's like a synergy of appreciation there.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like seeing an orchid and then seeing a pygmy orchid. It's just so cute. It's tinier. We have a cupcake, then we have a mini cupcake. How small can it get? Also, it's just interesting to see the pieces that you can use, because there are hundreds of thousands of Lego variety, but then say you're limited to certain pieces, then you have to get super creative on how you use it. And the way Andrew uses it may be completely different the way I use it. So just being able to have that kind of creative thought process is just, it's awesome the way, you know, how different things can look, you know, just by moving certain pieces around or using a different piece in a different manner.
I think also talking about the like fascination with models, I think it's also like a big picture kind of view of a particular place that you can't get, kind of also like how people love looking out. Well, some people do. If you don't have anxiety about flying like I do, you like to look out the window and see, like look down and see the cityscape and stuff. I think it's just like an opportunity to have like a big, like macro level look on something. Mm-hmm. And like, particularly with models, I know like you're saying about when you look at it a few minutes, you'll like look in and you'll be like, oh, they even have little people in there. Or like, look mm-hmm. at this small detail that they even fit yeah. in there. So like, I think there's something about like seeing that macro view in a way that you can't look at the whole building at once when you're in the building or even when you're outside of it. So I think there's something about it there. Yeah. Where it just presented all of it in front of you at once.
Yeah, it's almost like our brain gets not lazy, but it's hard to grasp all that information. So you put it all in a condensed, a smaller, it's just easier to appreciate.
And so also both of you had made points about how kind of Lego's original purpose is for children. How do you guys feel about all of the kind of like more complicated sets for adults now? Like, I bought my mom some flowers over Christmas. How do you feel about it kind of branching out and allowing adults to engage in this form in maybe a more socially acceptable way? Because obviously adults are allowed to play with whatever Legos. They're adults. They're allowed to do whatever they like as long as it's not hurting themselves or others. But how do you feel about like Lego kind of turning towards an adult market?
Can I go first? I'm in trouble just because they are appealing to our demographic. It's like they came out with the NES system. Like once they came out with that, I was like, oh, that's it. You know, I need to get a side hustle on top of my side hustle. It's because I know that they're gunning for my bank account. You know, every month they come out with it. This past month for June, they came out with over 50 sets. And it's just like it's hard to keep up. But they're pulling at our heartstrings with nostalgia. So they know that we can get some adults, you know, like it was first marketed towards kids. They know that, you know, a lot of us grew up without certain name brands like Lego because it was expensive. But now that we're adults and we have our own cash, we're able to spend it. So shame on them for, you know, making me poor.
Yeah, I guess the short answer is yeah, that's great. That continuing to model, build, and create is something that that everybody should do. You know, there is a lot of talk out there of like, why do people stop doing that at some point? I mean, artists and musicians continue to do it like their whole life. Scientists to a certain perspective are kind of like creating their whole life as well, but a lot of people shut that part of themselves off. So all these different ways that kind of we can continue to do that is great. Smart on Lego's part, you know, it's a way to do it. Something Christine said that I can definitely relate to is right. That the little child in you that always wanted X, but like you didn't have the money for it. Now you're an adult. Definitely. You still actually don't have the money for X, but you feel like you do because you can do it.
You're right. Your point about we kind of get to a moment where we, especially I think because Legos are toys, you know, like, so we get to a point where it's like, oh, well, we can't be playing with toys anymore. But also thinking about that the Legos that are geared towards adults is only one example of it. I also think about like adult coloring books. I feel like there is a real trend of giving adults permission to play and to continue to be in touch with that like creative, playful side, which I don't know. I overall think is a good thing, but there's also part of me that's like, is this also part of the infantilizing of millennials, of like that society can't look at millennials as adults, even though some millennials are in their 40s now. But I hope that it's not that. And I hope it's more just like as a culture, we've been like, hey, if you stop playing, life is really sad. So you should not do that. You should continue to play your whole life.
I think it's just really important that they are branching out. It is great for the company, but I think it's great just for us in general. I started teaching STEM to seniors. Why? Because it does help with Alzheimer's. So to me, this is like a little sensitive just because I really love this demographic. These are my grandparents. My grandmother didn't have the opportunity to play. You know what I mean? She just hustled her whole life. My parents hustled their whole life. So I didn't grow up playing with Lego because it was too expensive, you know? So my parents still don't understand the concept of Lego. I took my mother to the Lego store during my auditions. This was the fall before my auditions. And like she went to the Lego store and she's just like looking around. She's marveled at how many you know, colors and how, you know, these great structures are. And she's like, this is what you play and work with. Like, she just didn't understand. She could not understand how much society has changed that I get to play with Lego for my career. And the fact that I was able to be blessed to be on a show about this and how it changed my life and how it can change others and how it could forge relationships. You have on the show, the grandpappies, like you have someone there that's like close to 80 years old on the show. You know what I mean? Do your grandparents play with Lego? You know what I mean? Maybe if with a grandchild, but just on their own. So to me, I love the idea of bringing it back full circle, whether you were able to play with it as a child or not. Now you have the opportunity to do that.
I like that. Bringing it full circle and hopefully never losing your desire and giving yourself permission to play.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good note to leave off on. So I will bring us into our last segment, which is called The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish related question. So I thought I would ask you both, what kind of like fictional setting or world would you like to go on a vacation to?
I'm the kind of person that when I go on vacation, I don't like to as much. I went to school, I studied lots of architecture and I really appreciate. But for me to go on a tour is just, I don't want to go on a tour. I want to be on the beach. So anything, it would either have to be something in some kind of forest. A hike is okay. But if I have to go through some kind of reading history, that's not part of my vacation. So in my dream world, it would have to be some kind of, not wilderness as in survival, but just
connecting with nature.
Connecting with nature, yes. I'd even go as far as something as the Avatar universe, the blue people, not the Avatar Last Airbender. Although I do love that series, for the record. I'm a little obsessed with that series. So
I am too. It was great. I tell people all the time. It was like so good for even, it's a children's show, but it's like so deep. Yeah, I could go into a whole thing about Avatar Last Airbender. And a lot of cool environments there, obviously, because it's supposed to be a whole world. And so it has varied biomes, just like our world does. But also, and, you know, inspired by different Asian cultures. So
absolutely.
Be a pretty cool place to visit. I think that might have came up last time I asked this question. Someone said something about Ba Sing Se. And I was like, that would be cool. I mean, except for the lying to the whole populace about there not being a war. But besides that, seemed cool there.
There is no war. I'm passing safe.
What about you, Andrew?
Taylor, I'm certainly going to answer your question. But since it's the end, this is at some moment I did want to throw in. I don't know if you guys knew this. Do you know I used to work at the Cranston Public Library?
I didn't know that. No,
I worked. I had to make sure I mentioned that at some point. I worked. Let's see here. From the 90s to the early 2000s, I worked part time for the libraries. Still, I always tell people too, it was one of the best jobs I ever had. And they say, "Well, what job did you do?" Everything. I did everything. I think I worked at every branch. I remember subbing at Oaklawn a couple of times. I never did any regular hours at Oaklawn, but I subbed in a couple of times. Yeah, I always had a great time working there. So as far as not exactly a fictional setting, but is kind of fantasy, I would love to go back in time and spend a month in Rhode Island a long time ago. And I'm not exactly sure when my ideal time would be, but maybe the late 1800s at some point. I'd love to see walk through the streets of Providence. And see what that was like, and also spend some time on like an ox cart, just kind of like plodding down like what would have been dirt roads.
Yeah,
you know, would have been I spend a lot of time looking at old pictures, and I'm seeing all the old buildings, but I'm also looking at people, and for some reason I've always like wanted to just, I would love to know just like what they were like, and you know, what the world felt like what our world felt like then. I've often thought about that. If that were possible, that's something I would want to experience.
Nice.
All right. And so, where can people find you online if they want to find out more about your work?
With me, I have a Facebook page for my STEM classes. So I teach STEM classes all over New England, powered by tacos, or poweredbytacos.org, or Instagram is Legos Tacos Burritos.
You can find me on the web or any social media by just put in Rhode Island Lego artist, and I will come up whatever your social media of choice is. I try to maintain some sort of presence.
All right, fantastic. So thank you both for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening. If you'd like to chime in on our last chapter question or just reach out to the show, you can do that by emailing us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. And you can also reach out to the show using the hashtag DowntimeCPL on social media. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime. That's a whole conversation for another time.